And welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good morning, good morning, dear listeners. Obviously, as we are starting off on this morning session of My Sunday Morning Take with the sound specifically of Roxy Music. And before that was the group by the name of Mr. Mister. Yes, in the 1980s there was a band by the name of Mr. Mister. Literally, they had the, you know, the MR dot word for the same MR, Mr. Mister. But obviously introducing us on this morning session of My Sunday Morning Take, and where we obviously, you know, have the opportunity to engage with each other as well as also be in each other's company from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. And this particular Sunday has us a little bit, there's a lot of too much bits there. But it is a January, a month, a Sunday specifically that comes with a lot of, if we can call it sort of like, dread. Now the word dread, if you go look it up, it describes an aspect of fear and an aspect of anxiety, but it predominantly falls, it is a combination of both, but it predominantly would fall in the former, which would be the fear aspect of it, of its particular explanation, being that the world is finding itself on a threshold which, when I did the 3 January discussion, which was 2 weeks in that direction, remember, it was literally two weeks in that direction after the events of the Saturday, wherein the Venezuelan President Maduro was kidnapped, and thus also his country was thrown in a little bit of, without actually knowing how severe the situation on the ground in Caracas is. But we have all obviously seen what 3 January 2026 brought in for the year of 2026 itself. But today, or should I say yesterday, and since Wednesday, technically, this past Wednesday that we've just completed or have gone through, has been a tenuous and anxiety-filled particular past 4 days. Not for myself, primarily for people associated to the territory of Greenland, to people associated to the nation of the United States, and to people associated specifically in the European context. And for once, the discussion is not about Russia or about China or about which other particular nation is on the next target list of said particular international persons. It's not even about Iran, who was also in the particular conversation for this past week. And I've seen that the BBC International News Service have been doing their utmost specifically about telling a one-sided story, as always, in this particular scenario, and it is very funny, specifically how they do it, because the fear that I have suspected has been that for some reason, something is going on in Iran, specifically with regards to the protests in that country, but in this particular week itself, and since Wednesday, as I outlined, there's been a completely different dread that the world has been captured with. And this dread is around Greenland. Now, what we know from today specifically has been that a joint excursion by the U.S. Congress and Senate members, so it's from both houses of the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate, went yesterday or on Friday to visit the territory of Greenland, arrived in the capital of the territory, Greenland, in Nuuk, and they had a joint sort of like a press conference situation. They're standing in solidarity with the territory of Greenland. And even though, yes, myself and many of you would be thinking, Dwight, Greenland? Here's the thing, on evidence that still has to be presented to the rest of the world regarding the whatever actions that Maduro, the Venezuelan president, is accused of in a court in the state of New York, in the city of New York. We still have to see the evidence. The particular ambitions for Greenland are almost nothing in terms of the demands that are made by Washington, D.C. And it literally has a whole particular segment of Western Europe and North America captivated and captured in a sense of fear and warmongering. Now, one of the particular scenarios that obviously stems from this has been the opposite of what the current U.S. President Donald Trump has been claiming, that he is a peacemaker, but he has used aspects of force which has had everyone captivated, specifically in the sense that are we going to a all-out global war over things primarily in terms of, when you look at it on the surface of things, are not supposed to be talking points or are not supposed to be war aspects or even conditions for a war. So NUC happened. And specifically because the conversation since last year has been about, is the United States willing to attack another NATO member over nothing? And specifically over a territory that has never been a U.S. territory, that has never specifically sort of like, well, it has had some sort of a strategic importance because there have been multiple American bases on Greenland itself, but Greenland is primarily part of the Danish kingdom. So, as you look at the current affairs, as it is and is setting itself out, and as we're looking at world history obviously taking one or other slight turns, and, you know, you don't know what would be the very small event that would literally kick off the worst of events, specifically in that aspect or in that direction of the world, we sit with a clear understanding that this is how history is possibly biting us from behind. I wouldn't say in the behind, but from the back. You know, history is obviously always coming back from the back. But when you look at this particular aspect of what has happened, what has transpired in the past 2 weeks since the start of the year, and the year is literally only 2 weeks old, guys. 2 weeks old. That is how old 2026 is. And 2026 and the 2 weeks of January so far are feeling literally like we've been seeing this for at least 6 months of 2026. And it's only 2 weeks old. This year is only 2 weeks old. So, looking back in history, there was a key particular element that that resonates with the events, obviously, that we are seeing. Not that this particular event actually influences the events of today. No. It is an event, technically, where a U.S. president, an outgoing U.S. president at that time, actually warned the world. But he technically warned his fellow citizens, you know, in his country. But this is actually a warning that should have been to us, the rest of the world. A warning to help us understand specifically what's going on within the economy of the United States. And this is obviously seen, and we've heard about one of these particular developments, being that there was actually an extra $1 trillion US dollar allocation to the military ministry of the United States, that being the Department of War, after its name change took place. Instead of being the Department of Defense, it became the Department of War. And we obviously have now seen this aggressive posturing to the rest of the world. Now, with that development in mind and the current U.S. president, and remember, they allocated an extra trillion U.S. dollars to this same ministry, which obviously should tell you that there is an investment in the military of the United States. A major one. For sure. On 16 January of 1961, on his very last address to specifically, you know, the the viewers and the American families in that year of 1961. My namesake, Dwight D. Eisenhower, or his full name being Dwight David Eisenhower, gave a televised broadcast address. In the address, he literally warned the American citizens at the time to be cautious, to be suspect or to suspect the military-industrial complex of the United States and primarily its overall ambitions. Now, what was the accusation he was making? The potential for overspending to take place, but overspending only in one sector, and specifically that the sector needs an output. So the output, obviously, at that particular time was what kind of wars would you be participating in as a nation? And the other particular concerns were also the first use of this term military-industrial complex. Now, this is as, at the time, in 1961, America's oldest president was about to hand over, you know, the head of state functions. And, you know, there's always this handing over ceremony that takes place between an outgoing president and an incoming new president. And America in 1961 had voted in its youngest president, which was John F. Kennedy. And Eisenhower was going to hand over to Kennedy. Now, in that address, the use of the term military-industrial complex was coined by Eisenhower for the first time. And it was the first time that a U.S. president actually warned against undue influence of the machinations of legislation and governance that could distort the interests for a country. Now, we've got to understand this. And this is obviously where no particular confusion should arise primarily from this discussion, being that this was not a eulogy. He was not, you know, reading the, one of those lovely messages and speeches that you always find at the funerals of recently deceased persons and stuff like that, or at memorial services or of a similar nature. No. This primarily was a discussion, a warning, a look to the future and ensure that my words technically do not come to bite you in one or other scenario. Now, obviously, being the head of state of a nation, this individual has access to a lot of information and have access to a lot of particular discussions and talking points. However, no one obviously would have thought about it and even expected this particular realization to be ignored when we've seen for the past 4 years since 2020, and specifically since 2022, if you count from 2022 to 2026 now, specifically how the aspect of warmongering has been on its highest. Yes, the conflicts have popped off. Yes, the conflicts actually had multiplied as well around the world, whether they be civil wars in Sudan or specifically the Russia-Ukraine conflict that is still ongoing in the eastern territories of Ukraine. But there is one particular thing that stands out from this particular warning that Eisenhower gave back in 1961, and we will have the opportunity of going through that particular logic, the reasoning behind why he said what he said, and the warning that he left the world, specifically his fellow citizens, with. But it actually, you know, got transmitted to the rest of the world, so that the world can actually look at this discussion going, oh, okay, so there are these particular interests that we find in the societies that we live in a modern day context. It's not to say that it's not in Namibia, because Namibia's overall international relations policy is that we are a friend to all and an enemy to none. However, there are countries that obviously would want Namibia to be more friendly in one, scenario than having a neutral base, because we are part of the non-alignment movement, as well as also to technically pull us in a particular direction, you know, to be in their camp for most parts, for most engagements and for most international platforms and discussions around the world. Now, when we obviously look at the particular address itself, because in the second half of the day's program, we will be looking at the logic of what actually transpired and why Eisenhower identified this particular troublesome trend that he had seen already since the 1950s into the 1960s, which is something that is still prevalent today. It is still a key particular sector and has very strong particular roots around the world, primarily. And yes, it is a sector, obviously, that has produced many technologies that we even use today, but it is a sector that has a huge hunger. A huge hunger and a huge thirst specifically for continuous investment into it. Now, before we actually continue, dear listeners, in terms of looking at the speech of Eisenhower, we'll quickly take a short musical break and we'll come back right after this.
Yeah. searching hard to find. Cross the Rio Grande. Take me to your city lights. Down by the riverside. I know you understand. Play me something down tempo. Low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Girl with a diamond crown, grew up in a border town. Took me to an empty dive. Such a pretty silhouette. Show me how to two-step. She brings me back to life. Play me something down tempo. Low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Steady, body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the rain? Oh, just one more night. Just one more night.
Now we come back there from the sounds of Leon Bridges with the song Laredo. Before that, it was Jamiroquai with the song White Knuckle Ride. And you find yourself here between the 5 to 7 a.m. slot where you're in my company on my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station. Where we left off just before the musical break, we were going to get into the infamous speech, which is now famous. Well, infamous and famous, technically speak, to some sort of notoriety, being that it primarily highlighted, brought warning, or actually was controversial in one or other manner. But there isn't actually any element of controversy, because it actually warns the world back in 1961 about something that we know of today that is very prominent today. So, the famous address of 1961, specifically on 17 January, not on 16 January like I mentioned, but on 17 January, because the day is the 18th, was provided by the 34th US president at the time, that being Eisenhower. And he delivered it, it was televised across the US nation at the time. But it is best known for advocating that the nation guards itself against the potential influence of the military-industrial complex. Now, the speech also expressed concerns about planning for the future and the dangers of massive spending, specifically the biggest concern that comes out of the United States today, especially deficit spending and the prospect of the domination of science through federal funding, and conversely, the domination of science-based public policy by what he called a scientific technological elite. Now, Eisenhower played a significant role in the creation of this particular elite and its position of power, and also that there is an element of irony in the warning that he actually shared with the world back then. Now, the speech is actually one of two famous speeches that he gave, because it can be viewed in conjunction or literally as part of something when he gave his Chance for Peace speech, which was also known, which is also identified as bookends of his administration. So if you don't know what his Chance for Peace speech was all about, it was literally the day after it was given, the day after the death of Joseph Stalin. Now, the Chance for Peace speech is also known as the Cross of Iron speech, which was an address that he gave on 16 April 1953. And this is shortly after the death of the Soviet leader at the time, Joseph Stalin. Now, he gave this speech 3 months into his presidency, and he, at that specific time frame as well, in 1953, he once again brought up the notion that spending severely on weapons and arms and the likes. And remember, the man was a former U.S. general who fought in the Second World War. Former U.S. general. He was identified as the supreme commander of the Allied forces against the Germans. And primarily, you know, it sounds a little bit funny about all of this coming from a general who, you know, obviously was very close to the military-industrial complex of the same country that he became president of. Now, when you had a look at the particular discussion, Eisenhower served as a president for two full terms, and it was actually one of the pieces of legislation, not just him, but also Roosevelt, for that matter, Theodore Roosevelt, not his father, or was it his grandfather, the other guy that was also Roosevelt. And he was the first U.S. president to be term limited, meaning it was the term limits were brought in against him. And this is primarily from seeking re-election. Now, Eisenhower also overseen a period of considerable economic expansion. And this is even as the Cold War was deepening. Three of his national budgets had been balanced, but spending pressures still mounted. Eisenhower's defense policies based around a high technology strategy played a significant role also in expanding the size of the defense research industry. The recent presidential election of that time, which would have happened in 1960, had resulted in the election of John F. Kennedy, and at the time of Eisenhower's particular sort of like, last year in office, was that he was actually the oldest president that the United States had had at the time. This then obviously saw that, Kennedy would be the youngest president at the time. When the speech was made, as early as 1959, okay, the speech obviously happened in 1961, but as early as 1959, Eisenhower began working with his brother Milton, and a few speech writers. So he'd obviously been seeing things happen during his two terms as U.S. president, and things that he did not like. So he wrote the speech way earlier. Imagine that. He wrote the speech 2 years in advance. Now, this included his chief speechwriter at the time, Malcolm Moose. And this obviously led to him, all these particular sort of like parties to the speech, developing his final statement as he was obviously, preparing for his last public life, or his last particular sort of like element in public or existence in public life at that time as a president. And it went through at least 21 drafts, during this period. So it was a 2 year period, rewriting the same particular speech at least 21 times. There was enough, ample enough time. Don't worry. It's super enough time at the time. And the speech also had to have a particular flavor to it, meaning it needed to have a solemn moment in a decidedly unsolemn time. It meant warning a nation who was giddy with prosperity, infatuated with youth and glamour, and aiming increasingly for the easy life. So what does this translate to? Well, if you guys have not heard, or if you still do not know about the generational influences that are taking place, or that have taken place since 1945, is that we have these particular indications with regarding the analysis that many economists do, and sometimes you also don't need an economist to tell you this. You can probably just look at your parents, your grandparents, and you look at the opportunities that they had access to, their approach to, you know, advancing education from grade 12. In many scenarios, parents could be allowed to leave school at grade 10 because that would have been deemed sufficient enough skill set. In many scenarios also, like what I understood, is also that parents could leave, that, you know, our parents and grandparents could leave at grade 12 level at that stage. Also deemed as an adequate enough choice for a young person to make. In many scenarios, obviously, this led to them seeking employment at early ages. They could marry at early ages and they could, you know, start a family at a pretty early age. Wonderful. Now, when you obviously look at the particular economic pressures or economic scenarios that you've got to function under as a person today in society, and in many scenarios, and this is also where I particularly lay blame with some of the commentators who don't identify, you know, the history that Namibia has had. There was a particular time where people could afford things and, you know, price tags happened, and I'm not going to bring up the scenario specifically of how my uncle, you know, could start a life as a 21-year-old man, work, have start a family, be able to buy a car, still have money left for paying rent, and still have money left for, you know, any other expenditure during a month, vis-a-vis or in comparison to the current cost of living pressures that many people 45 and below, or even 50 years old and below, because we had COVID in between, would be suffering from. Now, when Eisenhower used the term or the phrase giddy with prosperity, infatuated with youth and glamour, and aiming increasingly for the easy life, this has obviously popped up in the particular discussions we've seen this year. This year is only 2 weeks old, but I'm now actually referencing back into last year, which is 2025. We've obviously seen that the promotional activities around the use of AI. Yes, AI does help improve many particular processing abilities, functions, and the likes. But in many scenarios, we keep seeing a younger, you know, group of people, specifically in the professional world, who are aiming more for the AI function to do their work for themselves, for them. And thus, trying to seek also, you know, the easy way life. And it's not the only example that I can leverage, primarily because it's probably the most shallowest example that does exist. But you do see this happen. I mean, we even here, as media professionals, we have to coach interns from, you know, not using AI as easily as possible. You use AI for other functions, to help with processing of something or to speed up a particular, you know, a particular element of the research that you've got to do, because I was trained in all these things. But the downside is you still have to read, you still have to research, you still have to do the hard work, you still have to call up someone and interview them, and you still have to do all the particular, you know, you have to invest the energy specifically into those particular aspects. Now, the easy life back in 1961, I have no idea what it was like. Obviously, for those of you that are more senior than me, you probably would have known what the easy life looked like in 1961, even if you were in Namibia at that time. The downside had been, there was this generation that we now know as the baby boomers. Who were the baby boomers? They were the people born between 1946 to 1965, I think. Yeah. They were the people born between, because you take a 20-year period, 20 to 15-year period. They were the people born between that particular period, between 46 to 65, 1965. And the baby boomers primarily were part of a generation who saw abundance, who saw, you know, access to many particular opportunities that they could, you know, participate in. And as I said, this is an exercise you can even do at home. You can go and look at the, you just need to know basics, certain basic facts. When did your parents marry? When were you probably born? Because you could also see how old they were when they could have children. What kind of jobs did they start off from? So on and so forth. Now, when you obviously look at these particular economic details, the economic alarm that Eisenhower signed off back then in 1961 was an alarm based on be careful of a specific sector that can influence overall government policy and lawmaking in future. One of the excerpts from his famous speech starts off on, as we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, obviously it's his speech, it's not, you know, my speech, must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come, not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow. Now, that particular one part of his speech has been something that many commentators today, since last year and the year before, had been warning about. Specifically, the unchallenged loans that are given to Ukraine. And specifically in that scenario, in terms of that, it looks like, you know, the Ukrainian, defense endeavor looks more and more like a black hole, meaning it's just absorbing energy. And the energy, i.e. in this scenario, is loans given to it. And the warning obviously has been, where does this money come from? Now, I'm not going to go through a whole rabbit hole of explaining to you specifically the influence of the petrodollar and the influence specifically of the dollarization of the global economy. Because primarily that is the whole basis that the US economy runs on. It has nothing to do with the local American economy. It has everything to do with how two countries trade with each other, request or agree to conduct the transaction in US dollars, and that transaction runs through the US and obviously is concluded. Which obviously shows the Americans specifically that if a contract is negotiated between Namibia and, let's say, DRC, and we agree on US dollars, they would be able to base economic activity off of that transaction or off of that kind of trade, activity. So when the dimension of warning against the plundering of resources and the likes, this has also been a great concern because, yes, it does take a philosophic perspective, that speech. And yes, it has a philosophic element to it in terms of, you know, trying to appeal to the humanity at the time. When I say to the humanity at the time, I'm obviously citing, you know, not just people in the US, but people around the world. But we obviously know what the world was like in 1961. There were still colonies in 1961. We were one of them, obviously. And the downside was you have to look at the perspective and at the context of primarily whose resources would be spoken of. Now, the speech continues on to cite a important part of our discussion for this morning, primarily because this is now where it starts getting into the interesting bits. Now, despite Eisenhower's military background and being the only general ever, in the 20th century, not pre-20th century, but he was the only general that was elected, in the 20th century to become a U.S. president, Eisenhower warned his nation with regard to the corrupting influence of what he describes as the military-industrial complex. It was the first time he used this term, and it was the first time actually he placed blame, or he actually warned fellow citizens or a nation about a specific sector in his own country. He cited this by saying the next passage, or by mentioning the next, or uttering the next passage. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well, but we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in defense establishment. And we annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all U.S. corporations at the time in 1961. Because obviously today you've got a South African who has American citizenship that is deemed as the world's richest man at $400 billion. His value. Followed obviously by the Frenchman that is valued at like $350 billion. So yes, you can obviously see this was a period specifically where, you know, the aspect of such wealth did not exist then. Now, the key thing about Eisenhower's particular, that part, because the speech still continues, I'm not going to read the whole speech, has been that it has been remembered more, even though it has a broad nature, and I read the speech, even though it has a broad feature and a broader approach and a pretty broad nature to it, meaning it communicates in a broad sense to whoever was listening at the time, it is remembered for the reference to the military-industrial complex, or making mention of it, or actually coining this term. Now, the phrase gained momentum or acceptance during the Vietnam War specifically, and also the 21st century commentators have begun expressing, opinions that a number of fears that were raised in his speech had actually come true. That the speech actually was sort of like a fortune-telling aspect. Now, the speech had also been adapted as an oratory for orchestra and for orators. And specifically, the speech was depicted in the opening of the 1991 film JFK. In 2025, Joe Biden invoked the military-industrial complex phrasing from Eisenhower's address in his own farewell address, where he himself stated that he was concerned about the potential rise of tech industrial complex that could pose real dangers to the American nation. Now, you guys would ask me if presidents knew what was happening within their nation's borders specifically, why would they not try to intervene? In a Namibian context, there's a very clear and obvious law that prohibits, and there's a very clear case regarding that law, where they use that law, that you may not prohibit someone from doing business. And if the business is not deemed as an illegal venture, meaning it is recognized with your business intellectual property authority, it is registered with your relevant ministries, it is registered at the relevant local authority it's trading within, then all, let's call them, elements regarding a checklist have been met. All the requirements had been met. As long as the business entity is not something that sells an illegal element or conducts a piece of business that is deemed as illegal under Namibian law, you can continue. And the unfortunate thing is, for example, like in the US as well, which has a further law that many businesses in the armaments or in the arms manufacturing aspect, They depend on this law's existence. It's known as the Second Amendment in the US, the right to bear arms and the right to own personal arms. But it's literally a law that's used more to say, hey, listen, I have got this unlimited free right as an individual to own a firearm. This particular indication is one that is problematic. Now, I'm not talking about the American scenario side of things, because obviously between 1961 to 2026, you know, the American economy in with its military-industrial complex, they ran wild. They have developed weapons far and beyond our wildest dreams. We can only sit here in Namibia and watch those particular visuals and images occur, and as they are transmitted around the world, of events like what happened with the 12-day war against with Iran last year, where the precision strike took place, or the events of 3 January 2026, how Maduro was kidnapped, and specifically that most of the people that died that day were the personal security of Maduro, who were all Cuban, if you did not know. And obviously also the preceding event, the events that built up to 3 January 2026. Now, we'll quickly take a short musical break, dear listeners, as we have reached the midway point for this morning's session here on your number one talk radio station of My Sunday Morning Take. We'll take a short musical break. After that, we'll come back and we'll look into why this, what the messaging and the military industrial complex actually entails, what it actually consists of, and the fears primarily of what Eisenhower was warning about, the undue influences that he observed himself as a president, as a two-term serving president, back in the 50s and 60s.
it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, bring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, twitch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it. Technologic, 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 technologic. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, tap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, crack it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it. Touch it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it. Lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, tie it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, stop, format it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, crack it, drop it, zip and zip it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, crack it, drop it, zip and zip it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, crack it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, ring it, pay it, watch it, turn it, leave it, start, format it. Technologic, 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 technologic. Technologic, technologic, technologic.
Coming back there from the sounds specifically of Daft Punk with the song Technologic, not by the song that Busta Rhymes made by the same name. Well, not by the same name. He technically sampled, you know, a good part from it. And before that, you heard the sound specifically of another electronic duo, that being the duo by the name of Jungle with the song Palm Trees, which actually brings us into the interesting part of the discussion also. The second interesting part of the discussion for this morning's My Sunday Morning Take, primarily on the aspect of, you know, how you need to look at the warning specifically that Eisenhower gave in 61, which was a similar particular speech method or speech approach or strategy that Joe Biden used in 2025 when he also exited the office, and specifically as an outgoing president. Now, the talking point that pops up or that comes about in terms of the speech itself had been when you look at the term military-industrial complex. There's nothing political about it, but it's interesting that a politician obviously cites to the world that you've got to watch out for a particular sector or characters or actors representing sectors for specific interests. And we've done lobbying here on Eagle FM. We've spoke about lobbying and lobbying groups or interest groups specifically that approach lawmakers, that approach ministries and ministers around the world. This happens around the world, primarily for the interests that they represent. This could be, let's say, from the mining sector. In many cases, it is the mining sector in the developing world. It is the mining sector. In other scenarios, if you're in the global north, it would be, you know, more advanced sectors like health, like the military, like policing, like technology. It has nothing to do with the developmental sectors, which is usually trying to improve health and service delivery and improve education for that matter. It is always about the sectors primarily that can or that are targeted specifically for great returns for these particular interest groups and lobbying entities. Now, the military-industrial complex is defined as a network of individuals and institutions that are involved in the production of weapons and military technologies. The military-industrial complex in a country typically attempts to marshal political support for continued or increased military spending by said national government of that country. Obviously, as this term was brought forward or was developed or was introduced by Eisenhower in his farewell address in 61, he also warned that the U.S. must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex, which included members of the United States Congress from districts that are dependent upon military industries. The Department of Defense at the time, along with its other military services and privately owned military contractors, which included the likes of Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and Northrop Grumman. Now, Eisenhower believed that the military-industrial complex tended to promote policies that might not be in the country's best interest, such as the participation in a nuclear arms race. And he also feared that its growing influence, if left unchecked, could undermine American democracy. Now, if we put a bookmark just in the middle there, a key thing that obviously any country wants is a few leading sectors within its economy, sort of like being the flag-bearing sectors. In Namibia, it's definitely mining and tourism, even though the actual development, I actually leave at the door of retail, or the retail sector, which is dependent upon other sectors having, you know, a strong performance within the Namibian economy. So the retail sector would be anything from selling of cars to the selling of clothes to service provision. For example, if you're buying various kinds of consumer services to the food retail sector, which includes restaurants and retailers specifically, in that realm. Now, when you obviously look at that particular aspect, these are sectors, or these are particular, installations in your economy that are dependent upon the performance of other parts of your economy. Meaning, if you don't have people in a specific town that have access or that have, let's say, stable employment with predictable, stable salaries and wages being paid per month, then obviously you cannot see the representation of the retail sector ever coming to your town. You can forget about it. They won't come there because they won't be able to do any kind of economic planning around how often do people buy certain products and the likes in that specific town. When you also look at the aspect in terms of Namibia's tourism, remember I said mining and tourism, even though many people would come and tell me, but yeah, what about agriculture? I mean, Namibia's agriculture also faces a little bit of a big question mark. Reason being is that Namibia's agriculture has to define itself and has to convince many people in the country, specifically in the aspect of climate change or with the threat of climate change looming over our agricultural sector, because climate change doesn't loom over tourism and over mining as heavy as it does over agriculture. Agriculture, you're literally dependent upon seasonal rainfall. And it should be rainfall that can actually work in your benefit. Otherwise, if you have rampant flooding or you have prolonged rainy season or prolonged dry spells of in your rainy season, then obviously you sit with two negatives versus the actual absolute positive that you keep striving for year in, year out. Now, when I say, and don't get me wrong, climate change obviously does impact tourism. Climate change does impact the manner in which tourism can also occur. Climate change does impact, for example, the kinds of products that you can position within that tourism sector. For mining just needs water. Obviously, in many cases, how that water gets there, it's on a case-by-case scenario, so I can't just blanketly say they use this source or that resource or that resource. No. Just know it needs water. That's what mining needs. Water and stable electrical supply. So when you highlight these particular scenarios, you sit with a picture specifically of, okay, so in terms of interest groups, not really. I mean, you know, they go and talk directly to Ministry of Mines and Ministry of Finance, you know, when the necessary need arises. For tourism, it's a scenario of, you know, how strong tourism numbers look. And the tourism numbers are usually based upon how many people fly in, which is immigration numbers from Ministry of Home Affairs. So when you've actually tried to look for a focus group, interest group, lobbying, those that lobbyists that try to lobby something, we technically don't know what it looks like in Namibia. We technically don't know what it looks like. However, it's not to say that they do not exist. It's not to say that they do not exist. I'll say it again. It's not to say that they do not exist, because lobbying can happen anyway, at any particular scenario. Lobbying for interests can happen. However, when you obviously look at the level of lobbying that takes place in other countries, for example, in the global north or in the advanced economies of the global north, you sit with a dilemma. Many scholars at the time when Eisenhower brought about the phrase military-industrial complex thought, oh, wow, this is a novel idea. This is something new that an American political leader introduced. And it obviously meant about and spoke to elements of domestic and international military industrial complex that also predated his particular address, because you had World War One, where there were literal countries, and these were countries that had colonies, specifically in Africa, who spent money on the resources that were extracted from Africa, taken to Europe, and they built their armaments around these resources. Yes, they also had their own resources, but Europe doesn't have the resources that Africa has, just so that you know, even though Europe had been specifically involved in Africa's affairs for almost 300 years, it still doesn't have the resources that Africa has. Another particular scenario also to look into that was, this is something that comes from Western Europe. It comes from the United Kingdom, it comes from Germany, it comes from France, it comes from Spain, it comes from Italy, it comes from Europe. It is a European idea. Gunsmithing, building armaments, is something that any country can potentially do. However, an industry lobbying for particular economic interests is another thing. An industry lobbying. Now, we obviously know that many military forces are funded by their governments or by their national governments. But this is obviously also seen that the various economic interests align with this particular endeavor. Specifically, that if your country has a growing budget, that the Lossied lobbyists obviously position themselves according to the industries or the sectors that they are aligned with. So if you're an international pharmaceutical manufacturer, you align yourself with the interests of, let's for example say, Namibia's Ministry of Health. If you're an international transport facilitator, or you build transport technologies, you would start talking to the Ministry of Works and Transport. If you are a mining company, obviously, but a large multinational, you would look for a joint venture or an access point into Namibia's natural resources. So you'd obviously do your necessary homework and you'd approach the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. If you're, well, this is where things get interesting. If you're a technology company, in many cases, the new aspect of technology companies is that they start talking to ministries like Ministry of Home Affairs around the world, or ministries like defense, specifically on the various kinds of, let's call it, surveillance technologies that they roll out, and what this particular aspect of surveillance technologies now need to do, specifically in the fight against terrorism, and also for the fight against various other kinds of threats that would emerge specifically from any part of the world. Now, the military-industrial complex at one stage was only identified to arms manufacturers. But the military-industrial complex can also now include technology companies. Let me say that again. Technology companies. There was an interesting discussion. Now, I didn't look much into it, but I also dismissed it primarily when the first time I read it, was the threat specifically of, if you look at a tech baron. A tech baron is defined as one of the technology billionaires, or the tech billionaires that exist, that are sometimes also known as the tech bros. And the particular control that they try to, that they actually have specifically over a, over a particular technology that has become part of our everyday lives and how they use this particular technology and also utilize it. One particular scenario was, the aspect of Elon Musk's, Tesla vehicles. If you're someone that purchased that vehicle, and I know that the car is not sold in Namibia, if you're someone, but you would have potentially heard or seen or read about this, of the remote disconnect function that Tesla has over your car. So if you own a Tesla, this can be in any part of the world where Teslas are sold. And there's an opportunity for, you know, let's say you just have a negative customer experience with the product itself. Your car can be remotely disconnected. Its functions can be switched off from wherever Tesla's headquarters are. Because it's an electric car. And it's a car that's technically also connected to many particular technology services or technological services. Your car can be remotely disconnected. Now, you could potentially say the same thing about many cars that still have their diesel and petrol engines today, because they also have an over, what you call it, they also have a lot of electronic equipment incorporated into them. The downside is the main technology you need the car to run on comes from the engine that you actually buy. Meaning that the actual technology that you buy in that particular context of a conventional vehicle or conventional car is the engine. You're buying the technology of the engine because ownership is transferred to you. Now, I gave you that example specifically, and I dismissed it because I didn't think much of the story itself, because I know this is what the technology companies have been pushing for, is they've been pushing for this rental program or this business model of rent. Paying rent for something that they give you or that they sell to you, but you're paying rent. You're paying some sort of a lease agreement scenario. This can be personal information, favorite memories of your life, and so on and so forth. But that the downside is you cannot own the particular service. Now, I understand certain service extensions, and I understand certain particular hardware, consumer hardware scenarios. However, what I don't understand specifically is their over-involvement specifically with surveillance software development. Now, the AI particular trend discussion has been one such sort of like haunting topic for the whole of 2025. You can call it whatever you want. The haunting aspect about the AI discussion is primarily who is behind it. I have asked this particular question also in 2025. What is the overall aim? You now have people, because in this coming week I'll be attending, it's going to be one AI webinar I'm going to attend in this coming week on the 21st of January. And it's particular pervasive usage that came about. Now, the downside is you see one or other particular aspect in terms of technologies, skills, development, and other particular, aspects of everyday life. This could be things like the creativity sector and more. more and more having to utilize this particular technology. And you can now see how this technology incorporates the work of four or five people. Sometimes it won't be long, specifically, before they actually use the technology to produce what you say, meaning they use speech to generative AI capabilities. Just giving you a hint there. It won't be long, but the overuse or the continued use of this particular technology, or the introduction of it after COVID, is positioned in a manner to say, literally, in one or other scenario, that the future of jobs is on shaky ground, that jobs or employing humans should be a thing of the past, and primarily that the aspect of looking at working towards a national program regarding employment and the likes should be a thing of the past. This means that when you look at aspects of prosperity, aspects of upliftment, aspects of community development, aspects of access to opportunities, aspects of decent living standards, all these things start becoming problematic. Now, I tie this into the said particular comment of Eisenhower back then in 1961, because we are sitting in a period for the last 3 years, 4 years, where technology is no longer a aspect where it is improving our lives, but more of a notion where it technically wishes to dominate our lives. Go and look at various things around your house. Go and look at various things that you wish to leverage around the place that you live, and your dependency on your mobile phone specifically. It's almost like a disorder versus genuinely trying to make contact with people. Certain sectors, and you can even see this in Namibia, certain sectors are and will die down. Sectors in the entertainment realm, internet has become so easy or so accessible. Things like going out for a night to a bar is a problem. Yes, there are still parts of Namibia, and I speak, you know, obviously with reality in mind. Yes, there's still parts in Namibia where people still go out and hang out at a bar. But if you've looked at a country like the United Kingdom, who is literally worried that bar culture, which forms part of the hospitality sector, pub culture, has died out because young people don't drink beer, or young people don't want to be drunk, or young people don't consume anything. Obviously, in the Namibian context, we don't do research of that nature, and we don't look into things of that nature. So the assumption is, in the, you know, the communities across the country who have low education levels, low access to opportunity levels, low access to, you know, improved services, obviously would know what, you know, teenage alcoholism looks like and teenage, you know, substance abuse looks like. So yes, that's born out of another scenario. But something that is actually a, or part of a sector and has a positive element to it, that being hospitality associated to restaurants and the likes, it's facing a particular threat because there are waiters who need tips and who are employed. There are business owners who try to put up a business venture in this likes, and you have the threat of pervasive technologies eroding certain sectors across the world. Now, you could argue that the military-industrial complex scenario that I highlighted from Eisenhower's speech, it doesn't carry the same particular importance, for example, like what the technology sector is doing. But the tech sector has become the more prominent sector across the world. It has become the most important sector in the last 20 years around the world. It has presented itself as the only sector that, you know, can outperform the tech sector. The military industrial complex from any country around the world. Because with the tech sector, anyone can access much of the services from any part of the world, from wherever you are, from any device, as long as there's internet connectivity and sufficient, you know, stable infrastructure regarding ICT infrastructure, any part of the world. Before we continue, guys, we quickly take a short musical break and we come back right after this.
watching as the walls are closing in. A shadow of a figure trying to make the best of the state that I am in. I guess I could do with the friends I've been pushing away, but I'm destined to suffer until I discover the reasons I'm afraid. God knows I try. It might not be good enough, but it's all I have to give. This is all I have to give. You might be right sometimes. I never open up, but it's all I have to give. This is all I have to give. Staring in the mirror, picturing the face of a younger man. He buries it away, 'cause he's gotta try and cope in a way he understands. Be there for your brother and strong for your mother again, 'cause he's too young to get it, and she'll get upset if she knows you feel the pain. God knows I try. It might not be good enough, but it's all I have to give. This is all I have to give. You might be right sometimes. I'm too scared to open up, but it's all I have to give. This is all I have to give. I tell myself there's nothing left to lose. I don't know why I'm hiding from the truth. I face myself and all I see is you. Is you. Watching as the walls are closing in. But God knows I try. Might not be good enough, but it's all I have to give. This is all I have to give. You might be right sometimes. I'm too scared to open up, but it's all. This is all I have to give to you. To you. This is all I have to give.
Now coming back there from the sounds of the Hurts with the song "This Is All I Have to Give," and before that you heard a little bit of the duo between Coldplay and Selena Gomez with the song "Let Somebody Go." Now, just in this last 10-minute period, specifically of this morning's session, a military-industrial complex, dear listeners, is still a particular significant industry to have. History has defined it as a sector that absolutely has achieved or assists in achieving the industrial levels and the industrial ability of a nation. And this can be a sector that can produce for everything and for every other sector. So from transport to communication to agriculture to mining to maritime and naval capabilities. It is a sector that has a wide and, you know, impactful reach for it to play a significant role. However, in most countries around the world, the military-industrial complex is a sector that is directly owned by the government or has a direct ownership, absorption, consumption relationship with the government of that nation. If you go to France, It is primarily owned by the French government. If you go to Germany, it is the German government that buys directly from the various weapons makers and so on. For example, Heckler & Koch, known as H&K. There is, what's the other one, the other German armaments manufacturer, no? I almost said Stauer. what's the guy's name? What's the guy's name? It's one of the rifles specifically that they've now adopted in the American Army, also coming from a German manufacturer. These are companies that are more than 100 years old in their own right. And it primarily is a scenario in terms of how you need to look at what you wish to do. Now, one of the greatest concerns, obviously, is that Africa is a huge consumer from the same military-industrial complex. Just look at Sudan. Just look at Somalia back in the 90s. Just look at Liberia, also from the 1980s into the 90s. Much of them where they used natural resources by warlords to purchase armaments that came from these other parts of the world, specifically from the Northern Hemisphere, to fight conflicts and to inflict harm and, damage infrastructure and the likes in their own local nations, communities, and so on. So the military-industrial complex has a pervasive reach. The military-industrial complex has a problematic relationship with maintaining peace. It can still play its particular role. The downside is just what this role has to be and what this role has to look like. We take another musical break, dear listeners. After that, it'll bring us up to the end for today's session, specifically here on My Sunday Morning Take. And this obviously is, as you know, the interesting particular conversation that you've got to look at. I know it went a little bit philosophic in its nature, but philosophy is an integral part of us humans, because there are times, obviously, where you just go and sit and think to yourself about the world around you. On that note, we take another musical break. We come back right after this. Let's take our time. Coming back there from the sounds of Take That, I did see the phone line flashing. Just to let you know, dear caller, that we still have a minute and a half before we end our discussion. When you've obviously got a look at the broader discussions, I haven't done much of the philosophic subject matter in terms of my Sunday morning take, primarily because it takes place in a specific historic context, which is not in many cases applicable to the modern day society that we experience and that we live in. However, Eisenhower's particular speech itself, and you will have the opportunity of reading up on it and looking it up on the internet, speaks true to the world that we see today. And with that particular, you know, insight that Eisenhower highlighted back then, is that you've got to ask yourself, you know, with the various developments happening around the world, what does this actually mean to your life? And how you see your life. Let me first quickly answer this phone call. Eagle FM, good morning.
Good morning, Dwight. How are you?
Good on
you,
Uncle Bona.
The discussion, to the presentation today is very deep.
It has to be, Uncle Bona. It has to be. I can't go into the whole speech itself, but it speaks true to the world that we see today.
I'm telling you. So tell me about the current development in the... with Trump and these European countries.
Well, here's the funny thing, Uncle Bona. It's something that I wanted to dismiss a week ago. Remember, after 3 January.
Yes.
So then there was a whole bunch of videos. There's a guy that I follow. He's an Austrian on YouTube. He has his own international relations channel, which speaks about specifically the international relations and the foreign policies, specifically of NATO, of the various European countries in NATO and of the United States, and of the things that are happening, the things that we don't see on news. He spoke to this Chinese lecturer that I had now only started looking up, a guy that works in the US.
Yeah.
And all of them, besides his platform, there was also another platform, but all of these people are speaking about World War III. Now, if you and I, Angabona, go and look at, you know, what we are exposed to, local Namibian media and the likes, we don't see the evidence.
I'm telling you.
We don't see it. You might say that we might be sheltered, we might be... what's that other phrase that they use? That we might be blocked off, that we might somehow not get the... access to the information, for example, like the things that happened to, you know, like my parents experienced under apartheid, you know, pre-1990, how the South Africans used to block out various international relations developments so that Namibians did not know what was happening outside.
Yeah.
We see the same thing happening, but these are discussions that even our African leaders, they might say, it's got nothing to do with us.
Oh, my God.
But what happened with us in 2020, Uncle Bona? We had COVID. We thought COVID had nothing to do with us. COVID impacted us.
It's true. So now, in this issue now, because I thought maybe Trump's many of this in NATO. The NATO, is he not going to get dissolved if it is going in this direction?
It probably would be.
Because the way I'm looking at the way Trump is playing his cards, and these European countries are now putting their mind together against this acquisition of this Greenland and all these other things. So me, I'm suspecting that maybe it might, because he was also saying that, yes, this, the Chinese and the Russians, now they are putting their ship in the... I mean, they are deploying their ship in the sea, in those other sea or whatever, those areas. And the other countries are also, European countries are also, you know, reluctant. And they are saying, no, we cannot just allow these things to be happening. So now the way I'm seeing it, I understand the Trump is, the US is powerful. But now, looking at the issue of these other countries, European countries who are not actually in support of his ideas, how will that the things turn out?
It's the weird aspect, Uncle Bona, because we as Africa, our relations is closely tied with Europe.
Yeah.
So we have to look at the aspirations and the particular moves that countries like Germany and France are doing. Germany and France are the two dominant economies in Europe. You don't have to consider the UK anymore, primarily because Germany and France are the actual economies in the European context, meaning that they have their own military industrial complexes, both these two countries, and that they sell a lot of hardware to the other European countries, except for Austria. But Austria, I found out, is similar to what's the other country's name? To Ukraine. I don't know if you know about this, Uncle Bona. At the start of 1990, Austria was asked not to join. It was part of the negotiations between the Russians and NATO that Austria, if Austria becomes independent, it does not join. Okay, not at 1990. Actually, after the Second World War, that Austria does not become a NATO country.
Okay.
So it's a very strange relationship, but it's a relationship specifically because if you remember, Uncle Bona, the Hungarians or Hungary, right next to Austria, was a satellite state during the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
They were part of the Iron Curtain. So it was one of these particular negotiations that took place. A country that was a former European power, a former colonizing power, should stay neutral. Specifically, it's not aligned to the Soviet Union and it's not aligned with NATO. So it's a country that stays neutral. It has its own particular democracies and whatnot, but it also has its own military industrial complex because the Austrians have a healthy, weapons manufacturing sector.
Yeah.
Now, when we look at this, Uncle Bona, the countries that have flourishing military industrial complexes are the ones that are featuring in this discussion that is happening in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
The United States, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, obviously, China, obviously. We don't know much about South Korea and about Japan, but they do make their own weapons.
So now I was reading some comments from the France president and many others who are also trying to be against the Trump's idea. So I am just afraid and thinking that how will the thing turn out? Because they might turn, and the people are suggesting that maybe NATO might crumble if they go on like that, because those countries who are now members of NATO and they are now against each other, how will that really NATO survive? That's my question.
Because there is a clause, or it's a part of the NATO agreement, Uncle Bona, that says that if two NATO members attack each other, the one that is the aggressor can be attacked by the other members, meaning they kept referencing for the past 6 months of Trump talking about Greenland, and about Canada, because he must also said Canada should become part of the United States. The various news organizations started citing, is it clause
I see Canada, they went into, I think there was something that Canada and China have got into agreement with.
Canada and China, Canada and in the EU, the Canadian Prime Minister, he is in Qatar. 4 hours ago, he went to Qatar. He was the former central bank governor of the United Kingdom, of the Bank of England. So he knows that, you know, he is doing all these particular deals, because he's taken away, he's realized what Trump is doing, and then he's taking much of that business away and positioning it to other business partners, meaning to other nations. So there's that development, Uncle Bona. And obviously, like I mentioned, the clause in the NATO agreement whereby if one of the NATO members attacks another NATO member, all the other members have to come and defend that member, the one that is attacked.
So let's see how things will turn out. Thank you very much for that lecture. I think it has just opened my mind.
Angabona, we don't want war. I'll tell you today, Namibia, we don't want war.
Ah, no, please, we are tired of those things.
Because if you look at our trade, Angabona, between Namibia and the EU, yes, there is South Africa, yes, there is China that we trade a lot with, yes, there's the rest of Africa, but the EU, if you take the EU itself, is a huge trading partner for us.
Tell me, Griffith, the one of the, because South Africa, China, and all this other thing, and Iran is also part of it.
Oh, the...
Now, when they're drilling exercise, military exercise, and things like that.
Yeah.
Is that not a way to come and protect us here in South Africa? Because maybe Trump, because I know Trump has been eyeing South Africa to make sure that it's really getting into confusion. Africa gets into confusion, and now they might also dare to just come for South Africa's rescue.
Do you know what is one of the weirdest things, Angabona, that is not, it's not being talked about anymore or being spoken about anymore, is whether or not South Africa actually has, what do they call that? It was something that existed pre-World War I. They are called defensive military treaties. So what this means, Angabona, if someone attacks you and you have signed a protection treaty with another person, that person, if you get attacked, that person can come and defend you. They can come to your help and come and help you. It's like thinking about the police. If you get attacked, the police can come and protect you and arrest the other person. They have all those powers. Now, the downside is, Angabona, you have to go and look for whether or not South Africa has defensive treaties with Russia and with Iran and with China. I don't think they have, Angabona, because the treaties have been something that have been shifted away ever since 1945. After the Second World War, because you started seeing this new kind of politician emerging, a politician that speaks about cooperation, peace, peaceful coexistence between countries, and expanding trade between countries, rather than being antagonistic, being rude, being arrogant in negotiations. It's more a discussion of let's try and coexist peacefully for a better future. So we have to go and find that. We have to find evidence of these treaties. Otherwise, it'll be a scenario of like people were talking, yeah, Russia and China might help Maduro before Maduro got kidnapped, and then Russia and China didn't show up, Angabona.
Yeah, no, I think it was not just a diplomatic kind of war. Maybe they didn't just want the war to erupt just suddenly like that. But as time goes on, they will still work on these things because very soon the America might be under pressure and they release the president there, and the things become normal again, because the people in Venezuela, they are also complaining. They say, bring our president and things like that. Is it not because maybe it's the tactic of the U.S., I mean the Chinese and the U.S., I mean the Russian, just to fight that kind of war diplomatically before it gets to that military intervention?
It's actually a no, Angabona, because you can even look at it in the American context. So Trump went and launched that national security strategy, the strategy that Helmut and I, we both covered on the Home Run last week, not this past week, the week before, primarily because it speaks of the sphere of influence that the United States is trying to recapture. Let's use that word, recapture. So that sphere of influence is the Western Hemisphere, which is from Canada or from Alaska or from Greenland, if you have to include Greenland now, all the way down to Argentina. Meaning, Donald Trump is telling the world, no other country can be involved with, even with trade relations, in that neighborhood of the world. That is what Donald Trump is telling the world.
But why is he doing that? Is it because his resources seem to be, getting finished or what?
We don't know, Angabona. We don't know. One of the clear things is that American oil is apparently not the preferred oil for the petrochemicals industry in the United States. Because it's, they call it sweet, sweet and light, the American oil. And the oil coming through from Venezuela is the heavy oil that is used for the manufacturing of many particular industrial products, from plastics to the jet fuels to the other, to the normal fuels for cars and so on and so forth. But the sphere of influence, Angabona, has been something that has come through from 1945 with the Cold War. Sphere of influence, you see it in the demands that Russia makes to NATO about stopping, about ending the war in Ukraine, that Ukraine has to be a neutral country. It cannot be aligned or affiliated with anyone else. The China. China also makes the same claims. No one should have or should try to help Taiwan. So it's all these spheres of influence. But Angabona, please hold on. We got a short ad coming up.
Okay.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Angabona, just coming back from that. So,
I think it's fine. I think that topic, I think we can continue the other time. Because it's very important that we are aware, and also just to for our knowledge expansion. But it's interesting that maybe Trump will reconcile, will repent.
Angabona, I doubt it. I doubt it. I mean, okay, I speak under correction. Let me correct myself, Angabona. When I said the spheres of influence started from 1945, it actually began pre-World War I, because the Americans introduced the Monroe Doctrine, where they literally were kicking out any colonial European powers out of North America, Central America, and South America. So it obviously highlighted the sphere of influence they want to have on that part of the world. Now, it makes things difficult, Angabona, because Brazil is in BRICS. And Brazil also represents a lot of economic activity in South America for South America, because Brazil is the biggest economy of Mercosur. And I don't know if you know who Mercosur is. It includes Brazil, it includes Argentina, Paraguay, and is it Uruguay? They're like five. Yeah. They're like five economies, and Brazil represents this cluster of South American economies. And they signed a massive deal just 2 weeks back with Europe, an agricultural deal, meaning they supply a lot of agricultural products to Europe, which has made the European farmers, specifically in the Netherlands and in Belgium and in France, very angry, because this means that those farmers will be priced out of the market, because the South Americans can sell you at a lower price, and the European farmers cannot produce or cannot come to the close to the cost measures of those South American farmers. So the sphere of influence actually comes through from pre-World War I, pre-1900.
So, okay, so that means it is also possible that there is a possibility that those are countries that you have just mentioned might be influenced or mobilized to join the BRICS?
It's, the idea is, Angabona, under Trump wants to break up BRICS. He mentioned it back in last year. He has been threatening that if the BRICS nations are de-dollarizing, meaning we move, if they move away from the petrodollar or using the dollar as a trade currency internationally, because it is what the American economy wants the world to do, so that they can have unlimited trade, what you call it, sort of like trade influence, which is the thing specifically that Russia showed us how bad it can be for your economy if you just have a difference of opinion with the United States and with NATO, that they can literally use your currency against you. So,
But that is what is happening now. So the dollar may also be, that's what is happening. So maybe the dollar and the America is realizing that, and the dollar may be becoming a little bit weaker. And we, of course, I think this is the war so that we are seeing.
True. It is a multifaceted war. 100% Ngabona. Thanks for the call.
Welcome.
Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, yes, it did extend my time specifically this morning by a couple of minutes, but this does bring us up to the end for this morning session of my Sunday Morning Take. Enjoy the rest of your morning in our company, and stay tuned for the rest of the programming to follow on after the musical break and the ad break.
Static white noise, submerged, no choice. I'll never ask, just given. All day, all year, too close, too near. I never wanted to listen. I don't look for congratulations or to hear the crowd applaud. It's just this reckless mind. Stones and clients, way hard of this mind, pushing on doors of bone on fan. I found out any meditation. I breathed until the air ran out. It's just this mixed up mind, wasting time, putting my decisions in doubt. With a mind full of madness and a heart.
Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world. You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you. From 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday.